In this episode of For the Rest of Us, Rob and I are going to be talking about how to answer the question of whether to build or to buy. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 355. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us. The podcast helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at building, launching, and growing software products, whether you built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Mike.
And I'm Rob.
And we're here to share experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. What's going on this week, Rob?
You know, things are pretty good. Feels like summer's turning into fall, and I'm ready for another summer before winter starts.
Is it like the post-vacation vacation?
A little bit like that, yeah. So we actually got a pretty cool email from Tom LaGrease, and the subject is how to survive with health coverage in a startup. And he says, love the show, listen to every episode on my commute. He lives in Melbourne, Australia. He said he wanted to comment on our discussion from episode 352 around healthcare. And I'll read from his email. He says, an option which people do is to move abroad to start their startup. Obviously, this depends on family situation, if you need local networks of people for discovery, et cetera. But a SaaS business can be started from anywhere. And in fact, many countries actually offer funding to entrepreneurs to go there for 6 months to build stuff. For example, Chile. If you pick a country with free or baseline healthcare, like the UK, Australia, or New Zealand, then you have solved the healthcare problem. Using Stripe Atlas or similar still allows you to have a Delaware/US entity. Might be an idea for future episodes. Best countries to go for 6 months to a year to build your SaaS product. Cheers. So good advice. I think if I was 20 years younger, I would totally consider doing that.
Yeah, it reminds me of a Tropical MBA episode I heard a while back. It was episode 365, where they talked about Estonian e-residency and, you know, all the different things that go into it. So it just reminds me of that and the idea of being just location independent, because that's kind of really what the Tropical MBA is kind of based on. It was really interesting hearing from the director of Estonia's e-residency program and how they've positioned it to allow people to establish that e-residency and then work from anywhere in the world and just basically use that as their financial center. So if you're interested in that, we'll link that up in the show notes. But I would definitely recommend that for people if you're interested in kind of looking into going abroad and getting an idea of what one country's solution to that particular problem is. But there's a lot of different places that are starting to offer very similar things.
Yeah, I certainly think it's not for everyone. I think that it depends on your personality and it depends on if that type of thing is interesting. When I was younger, I enjoy travel now more than I used to. But frankly, when I was in my 20s, which is when I probably would have done this, right? Like before I got married or before I had kids, I kind of wanted to be here to start the company. And so I think it depends on really what your goals are and your personality and that kind of stuff. How about you? What's going on?
We got another email from Stephen Johnson who said, hi, Rob and Mike. I wanted to say thank you. I love the community and the podcast. A year ago, I was doing around $5,000 a month, and I started listening to your podcast and made some changes to my business based on what I heard. And since April, I've been averaging about $15,000 a month. And Stephen writes to us from Glacier Peak Studios. So that's great to hear, Stephen. Really appreciate that email.
Yeah, that's awesome. This is one of the big reasons when we get emails like this. Like, this is why we do the show, and this is why we do the conference, and this is why we talk about this stuff and share the knowledge we've learned. Is, you know, it's to help other people. It's like to build the community and have us all kind of, you know, have the rising tide lift all the boats.
Aside from that, the only other thing I've got going on is just banging away at support issues and various onboarding, getting customers onboarded into Bluetick. So my launch went reasonably well for kind of what my expectations were, and things are moving forward at a fairly fast pace at the moment, and just making changes to the app and making it easier for people to kind of self-onboard and guide them through the onboarding process, identifying where the bottlenecks are and hopefully get them solved.
Between support and onboarding, do you have any time to write code?
Well, so for the onboarding, it's a lot of code that's in the app to like recognize certain conditions and when those things come up. Like, so that's the most of the code that I'm working on is just making it so that it can identify what those, like what the next steps are for the person, and then say, hey, this is what you need to do, and make things easier to find in the app. And just like, if like, for example, if a mailbox starts to fail, or if they haven't even set one up, like pop up a message like when they first log in and says, hey, this is what you need to do, so that they know exactly what they need to do and they don't have to go to a personalized onboarding session or anything like that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And the nice part is, as you do this, you should receive fewer questions. You should see more people getting further into the app. You know, we used to have a dashboard where we had kind of three or four steps that people needed to do to get set up with Drip. And next to each account we had, it was like checkboxes. I could just flip to see all new trials and I could see who hadn't checked the boxes. And we started basically measuring progress on an aggregate basis of how, what percentage of current trials have, you know, have installed the JavaScript, have activated a campaign, have set, activated a form or whatever. I forget what the four steps were. I think another one was a workflow. And we definitely saw noticeable progress to a point, and then it just stopped improving. You know, it's like you kind of peak out. That's when it told us, like, we've done a pretty good job with our onboarding. It could probably be improved, but we kept adding more stuff in it and it wasn't really doing it. So hopefully you will get to that point soon, and then you can stop, you know, you can stop worrying about it for now and get back to, you know, building features and doing whatever else it is that you need to do.
Yeah, that was one of the first things I did, was kind of built a dashboard that it has almost kind of what you just described. I use numbers to indicate whether or not they've done it or not, and then it's just color-coded the boxes in a basic table. So anyone who's logged in or who's created an account or subscription, I can see whether they've done this step and how many, like, for example, have they added a mailbox, yes or no, and it's color-coded if they haven't. So it's red if they haven't, and it's green if they have. And then it tells me, like, the number that they've created. So I can see how far they are along and how heavy of a user they are as well. But I don't have anything that gives me statistics or, you know, over time what the percentage or conversion rate or anything like that is on those. So that's something I probably have to add in at some point. But yeah, the basic stuff that I'm doing right now.
Sounds good. What are we talking about today?
So today we're going to be answering a question that came from Christopher Jarl. He had a question about whether to buy something off the shelf or to build it. And he says, "Hi, Mike and Rob. Thanks for the great podcast. I'm currently planning my next step for my business, which is a small SaaS app. My question is this. One of the components that I need is a JavaScript library with some specific drag and drop capabilities on the front end. There's one commercial alternative out there, but it's pretty expensive, and buying it would consume a lot of my available resources. I'm also hesitant because chances are that it only supports about 50% of the functionality that I need, which will leave me with very little funds. I'll still have to do extensive programming on my own in a library that I'm not familiar with. What would you do in a case like this, and why?" So I thought what we'd do today is kind of walk through the general steps that you would go through and the questions that you would ask if you're in a situation like this where you're trying to figure out whether or not you should buy this library, even if it's very expensive. Because I've been in situations before where I have this library or this piece of functionality that I want or need, and the library for it is expensive. It could be a couple of $1,000s, and it might not get you as far as you want or need to be. And the fact of the matter is, like, you're going to have to learn all this stuff that goes with it, and it may not be worth it. So the question is, like, do you dump a couple $1,000s on something, or even if it's a couple hundred, if your budget is much smaller, do you do that and then try and figure out afterwards, or are there other ways around this particular type of problem? So one of the dangers that we have as developers is that we know that we can build almost anything given enough time. And the fundamental question here is, how do you determine when it's better to build something versus buy it? It applies to things like software libraries, components, infrastructure, entire software packages, for example. And you really need to do some sort of a gap analysis between whether or not you build versus buy. But in order to do that, you have to have questions that you're going to ask to help establish what that gap looks like.
Yeah, I do think there are times, I think in most instances, if you're thinking about build versus buy, hopefully you've already thought through this seriously. Like, you've already thought, do we actually need to get this going? And you've spent time evaluating it. But I do think it is an interesting kind of thought experiment to sit down and think, are there alternatives to this, to doing it the way that you want right from the start? I think about, like, in Drip, we have workflows, right, which are visual, basically marketing funnels. And we didn't build those from the start. You know, we built basic automation rules to start with, which were basically, you know, there's a trigger on the left, there's an action on the right, and there's drop-down lists to select what you want to do. And we didn't invest the 5 months of time or the, you know, whatever, many thousands of dollars. If I'm sure if a library even existed to do that kind of stuff, it would have been expensive. And we didn't do that because we were able to get by for a year and a half with just basic automation rules. And that's something to think about. Is that, you know, and it's not going to be in all cases. In some cases, you absolutely need to get the drag and drop, or to get the best thing for the job in order to make the app work. But if not, it's always good to think about alternatives.
So next step when you're doing your gap analysis is to try and figure out what the critical features are that you need versus the ones that are nice to have. So Rob just kind of described what the process they did with Drip was, where they didn't build those workflows, the visual workflows up front. They just built these little rules that you could kind of chain together, and they were all ran independently. It was much more of a manual process, I'll say, to put them together, but it worked. And that's really what helped people in the early days and helped the business get to a point where was making money. And if it's not directly in the path of getting the business to making revenue, then you can probably avoid it. You can probably get away with not doing it. And I think the another piece that comes into answering this question is, how far along are you in the business? Like, if you're not making any money at all, these types of questions make a lot more of a difference than when you're making $10,000, $20,000 a month, because then you've got money to play with. You've got revenue that's coming in and you can pay for things, versus when you still don't have any money and you're not real sure whether or not that bet is going to pay off. And that's, I think that's kind of the fundamental place that Christopher is coming from, is he doesn't have a lot of money to dump into this because it's not making anything yet.
Yeah, which is a tough sell for me. Like, you know, in his situation specifically, given that he's going to spend almost all of his money and then still have to write a bunch of code, it's only going to get him halfway there. I would either not buy it and build it, which I have a tough time saying, because if there's something that can do, that can save you months of development time, it's almost always worth buying. The second option is I would consider saving up longer, get more money in the bank so that it doesn't kill all of your, you know, all of your savings. But it's tough. Like, early on in your entrepreneurial career, you're going to have more time than money. And then later on, you should have more money than time, and you're going to swap at some point. And so it sounds like Christopher's still early in his career. And so if you do have more time than money and you can hammer this out and you can work these long nights and weekends, or even during the day, he doesn't mention if he has a job, I would honestly probably, you know, if I were in his shoes and I was thinking about this, I think the money's probably going to serve him better somewhere else. It's a tough call, but that's probably what I would lean towards, is hammering it out, which, again, I hate to say, because as developers, we always want to build it, right? Oh, I can build it better. I can build it cheaper than that person. And you're going to way underestimate how long it's going to take you.
But I think the third option, which is kind of an implicit one, is, can you just avoid either one? Can you just not buy it and not build it at all? Can you get away without it and completely for the time being? It's not to say you'll do it forever, but can you push off or delay the decision until much further in the future? And I think in a lot of cases, there are definitely ways to do that, which will help you move the product much further forward than you otherwise would if you sat down and spent all the time, you know, working out through the library and building stuff. It really depends on where that component or that library has to reside in your code base and what it does for you. But there's a lot of situations where you don't even have to do it at all, and you could just avoid it entirely for the time being.
Sure. No, that makes sense. And I think in the context of this episode, we should assume that obviously you've evaluated that and that you've decided that you do need it. And we should expect, if Christopher's asking this question, obviously if he can avoid buying it, then he should, or avoid building or buying, then he should. But we should probably assume that he really can't, that it's the core of his app. Let's just assume it's the one feature that is going to be in his app is this drag and drop thing. With that in mind, I mean, the next two kind of tie in to each other, the next things to think about. One is, when do you need these features available in the timeline of your app? And what would be the timeline to develop them, to build them from scratch versus to buy them? And is putting the money down, does it save you enough time that it makes it obviously worthwhile? You know, does it save you 2 months or 3 months and, you know, you have other competitors around, or that like 2 or 3 months is a vital component to your success? I think about something like LeadPages acquiring Drip. And during the acquisition process, one thing that Clay had said was, Clay's the CEO of LeadPages, one of the things he had said was, this is going to give us, you know, a 2-year jump in this space. They could obviously have built their own ESP. They have software developers, they have product people. I mean, that, you know, they had funding to do it. But he said the reason we're paying this money for your company is to really leapfrog us. And that time that it's going to save us is a big deal for a venture funded company that's trying to get somewhere very quickly. Now, if you're listening to this podcast, the odds are pretty low that you're in that boat. But, you know, this idea of, when do you need features available and how long will it take to build them, I think is kind of the next thing to think about.
Next on the list is, do you have the runway available to develop those features if it takes twice as long as you think it's going to, if that's all you work on? And by all you work on, I mean nothing else gets done during that time. Can you coast until those things are done? And this really goes back to the fact that most of us are inherently terrible at estimating timelines, especially when they get too far out. So it's easy to say, okay, this is going to take me a couple of hours, or even on a longer project to say, okay, 3 or 4 weeks, yeah, we can get this done. Once you get out to something that's like 3 to 6 months, there's so much involved in all the things that need to go in it that it's going to be really difficult for you to identify in advance all the little gotchas and edge cases that you're going to run into that need to be dealt with. And for you to replicate a lot of things in a very complex library is going to be difficult, and it's probably going to take you twice as long as you think it will. And that's not just because we're bad at estimating. It's also because we're inherently over-optimistic as developers over what sorts of problems we're going to come into and our ability to resolve them in a kind of a timely fashion, because we're going to get pulled in a lot of different directions. And it's difficult to dedicate all of your time to just those things. So doubling the amount of time that you think that it's going to take is probably a reasonable, if not overly conservative thing. You might even want to quadruple it.
Yeah, I think that's the key there, is that double or quadruple, because it does wind up taking a lot of time. And it's oftentimes because we don't think of the edge cases, right? Once you get into something, you realize, oh, if I don't do that, and then it's going to break, or this is confusing for the user, so we have to add this whole other series of screens or something like that. So I agree. This is a tough one. And it's so easy to be optimistic and estimate 1 month or 2 months to build something and have it easily take 4 months to actually get into production. You know, there's a difference between hacking out some code and actually having like fully unit tested, high code quality, maintainable, performant, you know, all these things can easily take you, another month or two. And it's something that we don't really think about. Another thing to consider is, can you resell what you think you could build? What you're building, is it related to the existing product, or would you need to target an entirely new audience? Because obviously, if it's a new audience, you don't even want to think about, you know, launching a second product. But it is interesting to think that if you were to build the library, would anyone else out there buy it? You know, again, I'm guessing the answer is going to be no, that it's not worth it, right, for the distraction. But it's definitely an interesting kind of thought experiment, I think.
And I think ideas like this come up a lot when we're developing things, just because we look at that and say, well, it's been really valuable to me. Maybe I could make some money from this and sell this component to other people and build a business around that as well as this other thing. And really, you're just splitting your focus. And in most cases, it's not going to work out unless you've built an API or a library yourself that is usable in a general case scenario, and you have the time to dedicate to it. And chances are really good you probably don't have the time to dedicate to it, because it's a lot more time consuming to build a second business at the same time as the first. And it's honestly like not going to work out very well in most cases. Can't think of an example of where I've seen somebody develop two different products at the same time and sell them to different audiences.
Yeah, you're just stretched too thin, you know, especially when you're a solo founder. Next thing to think about is, what commercial or open source options are available? And are they cost effective in meeting your timeline? Because buying something can be expensive. And if it doesn't get you all the way there, then there's still that whole other struggle of adding on to it. And then open source can it can be more trouble than it's worth. If you get something that is not maintained going forward, you know, you get a project essentially that gets abandoned, or that has already been abandoned, or maybe you get it and you spend a week tying into the API and then you realize that it's buggy or it doesn't do what you need to do. So this part is harder than it seems, right? It's relatively infrequent that I think you'll find a perfect match off the shelf that you can buy that's going to solve all your problems right away.
And that's totally true, but I don't necessarily think that you need to solve all of your problems right away. Really, in the early days, we are just trying to solve the problems for the customers, and there's a lot of things you can get away without doing. And if you can just carve off like a tiny little slice of the thing that you're trying to implement that is in the path to revenue for your customers, then you can find an alternative that isn't nearly as good as what you want. And it's, yes, it's a suboptimal solution, but if you integrate it in such a way that like you're only using those pieces that you desperately need to get something working that people are going to pay for, then it gives you the ability to go back to it in the future and buy something that is more expensive or has more features and is an alternative to the one that you were originally looking at. And maybe that's the optimal thing that you should buy, but are there solutions out there that are a lot less expensive or can get you to where you need to be that are an alternative to what the optimal solution is for the time being? And along with that, like, is the technology or the component that you're looking at, is it going to provide you with any sort of a competitive advantage? And that competitive advantage can be either speed or efficiency or productivity. And all three of those things can be either for you or for your customers. And if you can put something into your app that is going to make your customers more productive or more efficient at what they're doing, then they can get into your app, do their job, and get out. And it will provide more value to them because of those things. They're able to do those jobs faster than they would if they were in a different app. And again, those things apply to you as well, though. If you are able to develop something faster or be more efficient about the resources you're using, maybe it's AWS resources or servers or backend storage, if the component allows you to do those things at a lower cost and it is able to improve your bottom line because you're not spending as much money doing hosting, for example. And then all of those are things that you should take into account when you're trying to determine whether or not to build or buy it.
Yeah, you know, here's another thing I'll throw out. Like with Drip nowadays, in almost all cases, we would choose to buy it just because we're at the point, you know, basically having the funding of lead pages. It would be pretty extreme that I would want to take developer time away from building features or scaling the app to go build something. Even, and not even build, but like think about, example, continuous integration. Like we pay hundreds of dollars a month to Circle CI to handle continuous integration, but there are free open source CI servers that we could download, put on a EC2 instance or multiple, scale that computing power up and down, you know, but we'd have to maintain it and I need someone to learn how to use it. And it would be a switching cost. And, you know, when you look at it as a few $100 a month and you think about not only how much does a developer make, but how much you're losing, the opportunity cost of a developer or a DevOps person not improving the app, it's a big deal. And so that's the other thing, is it's all of this rotates around like how fast do you need to move and how fast do you want to move? And then how much money do you have?
Kind of coupled with that, like you said that you're paying a lot of money for Circle CI, there's also the question of like, what is the maintenance cost of keeping things up to date? Are there things that are going to be changing that are outside of your control, or do they handle it for you as part of the updates? So that could be like protocols that are changing on the internet. So if you've got a networking library, for example, a lot of times it makes more sense to use something off the shelf than to build your own, because there's so many different edge cases and exceptions that you can run into that you're just simply not going to think of or consider when you're trying to build your own. And it's just too complicated to keep up to date with all the different things that are going on.
And finally, I think the question you should probably ask anytime you're building a feature, considering spending time or money on something, is can the scope of what you need be reduced in any form or fashion? And it's just kind of, you know, going back to first principles and rethinking, do you actually need to build or buy what it is that you're thinking about? Or is there an alternative, or is there a way to, you know, perhaps reduce that scope?
So hopefully a lot of these questions that we've surfaced and the topics that we've talked about resonate with you in a way that like helps you determine whether or not you should build or buy something. But really, you just need to go through the list of things and say, like, what is the most important thing to you right now? And are there things that can be pushed off? And the final thing is, do you even need to make this choice right now?
That wraps us up for the day. If you have a question for us, call our voicemail number at 888-801-9690 or email us at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from our Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Startups and visit startupsfortherestofus.com for a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.